Okay, here we go. Stand by. 3, 2, 1.
The Thinking Atheist. It's not a person. It's a symbol. An idea.
The population of atheists in this country is going through the roof.
Rejecting faith. Pursuing knowledge. Challenging the sacred.
If I tell the truth, it's because I tell the truth. Not because I put my hand on a book and made a wish.
And working together for a more rational world.
Take the risk of thinking for yourself. Much more happiness, truth, beauty, and wisdom will come to you that way.
Assume nothing. Question everything. And start thinking. This is the Thinking Atheist Podcast, hosted by Seth Andrews.
Kind of a weird show today.
I approach you, my brethren, in a time when I feel very vulnerable.
And so I'm just going to speak my mind. For better or worse, I debated on even releasing this, but I'm going to go ahead and do it here. I want to talk a little bit about the season, the time of year, the holidays, you know, what it's like to be a non-theist over all these, Jesus is the reason for the season holidays. I'll be honest with you, it has been, it's just been a weird last few weeks, while I'm waiting for the switchboard to populate, I'll tell you about it, because I'm not really sure what else to do. But, and this may be about the season, I don't really know. But it was a few weeks back, I've got this routine, you know. I get up in the morning, I take care of the dogs, I see Natalie off to work, I make my coffee, and I come up here to my studio. And I usually have a ton of stuff that's, you know, when you produce a podcast pretty much single-handedly, which is what I do. I don't have a staff. I don't have researchers. I don't have preparers of the material. And so it's, it's usually just me. So whether it's the year in review or whether it's ghost stories or preparing for a show on a cult or Christian nationalism or something along the lines of something specific. It's just me. And, you know, when I started, there were a few podcasts. But now, right now, in 2021, I could throw a rock and hit 10 podcasters. I mean, everybody's got a show, you know, which adds to the feeling of pressure because you have so many options. I mean, you've been with me for so many years. We've been on the air since 2010. And, now with so many options, I know that if you're not getting what you need from this broadcast, if we're too redundant or not compelling, not entertaining, not meeting whatever needs you have as a listener, you've got options. You can just take off and disappear. And I totally get that, you know. And so I feel a tremendous sense of responsibility to try not to suck, like every single week. And we mix it up. Some days we talk cults, and some days we talk Christian nationalists, and some days we do something fun like general knowledge broadcast. And some weeks we take calls, and some weeks we just spend time with a guest. Looks like I'm going to bring Aaron Raw back on. We're going to talk around the holidays. That's always fun because he was the first guest I ever had on the show. But I did my morning routine, and I came up to go to work, and I pulled up my prep, and I couldn't see it. And not physically, not literally, but I just went blank. I can't process the stuff that I'm working on. It's like there's a flashing light, not a literal light, but something that's a constant interrupter of concentration. And I thought, well, you know, it's a form of writer's block, maybe. You know, anybody who's an artist or content creator of some kind, maybe you just, you know, you hit that wall. And you say, well, you know, this is just temporary. It's artist interruptus kind of thing, you know. And it's been a while since I've taken any time. I'll take the day off. And so the next day, I came back and I pulled everything up on the computer, and there was that flashing light again, and I couldn't see it. I could not process. I'm working on a manuscript for book number 5 for 2022. I pulled it up. It looked like a foreign language. For the edits, for the massaging of the content, perspective, trying to make sure that it's as good as it can be. Preparing shows for December. 2 days of that became 4. And 4 became 7. And 7 became 10 days. And I panicked. And there's still a little bit of that going on. I'm still a little panicked. What happens if you, and this is, I'm sure it's an irrational fear. What happens if you lose the ability to do what you do? And then self-doubt kicks in. And you say, well, do I have anything left to offer? Do I have anything left to say? Everybody's heard my story, and maybe we've covered all the topics, and maybe I should leave it in the archive. And then what does that mean? Because it's not just my passion, but it's you know, how I pay the house payment. It's how I put groceries in the fridge. It's, you know, then it becomes creativity by necessity. It's not just what I love, but, you know, if this isn't here, who's going to hire me? What else would I do with myself, you know? One Google search of me. Can you imagine a potential employer? He's this guy. And that's not what I want. It's not what I want. But that's the bunny trail that I've been taking. You know, what happens if I am not able to get rid of the flashing light, if I can't redial in, you know? And I hesitated talking about this because I worry, I don't know how do I say this? I worry about too much transparency. And I think it's good to be your authentic self. So if you're having a bad day, you know, you go online and people will post, I'm having a bad day today and here's why, or here's a very intimate part of my life that has gone awry and I want to talk about it. And I think that's great. You know, that needs to be, you know, be true to yourself. And if it's part of your journey out, fantastic. But I'm also aware of how often whenever, you know, we see this avalanche of people who are sharing these very intimate parts of their lives, their dark days, for lack of a better way of phrasing it, then other people who are carrying their own specific burdens may feel increasingly burdened. You know, they've taken on their own challenges, and they also become very aware of somebody else's challenges. And then you see several people doing that, and your burden becomes worse. I never wanted to be that guy. I didn't ever want the show to be a downer. I don't know. I'm just babbling. But I come to you in all humility as a guy who has been going through a few weeks of struggles creatively. Perhaps it has something to do with the time of year. It could be the encroaching holidays. I don't have a problem with Thanksgiving or Christmas. I don't know that I look forward to them. When I'm at a family event, oh, it's Thanksgiving. It's the same every year. You know, we get together, we mingle, everybody gets into their respective pods, and finally it's time to bless the food. Oh Lord, we thank you for this delicious food today. Thank you for your many blessings. And we pray that you will nourish this food to our bodies and our bodies to your service. In Jesus' name, amen. And it's the same goddamn prayer every freaking year. All right, everybody. And then we all eat. And maybe I'm projecting it, but I'm constantly aware of how outside I feel. You know, our prayer meeting on Monday was wonderful. So-and-so wants to talk politics, and they are evangelical MAGA Trumpers, you know. They're wearing T-shirts. I've got one relative. Every time I see her, she's got her damn church shirt on, and she must have 15 of them because it's a different shirt every single time I see her. Her whole wardrobe is nothing but shirts, Jesus apparel, you know. And I'm sitting here, and I'm cognizant of the fact, and this God, this sounds petty. But, you know, hey, how's work? Nobody asked me that question. Hey, how are things at the, how is your work going, Seth? So-and-so, they get asked about their lives. How are things? How's the job? Those conversations never directed, near me. Are you traveling? Any conferences coming up? You're going to get a chance to go and participate in a special event. I know that you go out and do a lot of public speaking. So, hey, tell us about it, Seth. Never. Never. Not that I need to talk about myself for validation, but I'm othered. I feel the outsideness. I was browsing an article about secularism and non-religion when it comes to familial relationships for people who come out as an atheist. The first part of the article, that's common ground. Atheism, non-religion, growing in the United States, especially in the under 30 crowd. We talk a lot about that. But the article then says that many people in the United States believe that people without a belief in God are less likely to be moral, or that atheists have no moral compass. There was a survey in 2016, the American Religious Identification Survey, and they talked to more than 800 atheists in the U.S., and about a quarter of them, nearly 25%, reported, quote, being rejected, avoided, isolated, or ignored by family. Almost 38% reported that their families asked them to keep their atheism a secret. Whatever you do, don't tell anybody. Can you imagine asking a God believer to keep their belief a secret? They would be scandalized. Somehow the rules are different for us. Chelsea, thank you so much for calling the show. Are you with me?
Yeah, I'm with you. And I just, like what you just said, that's what I'm calling about.
Yeah, what's up?
Last year for Christmas, I finally came out to to let my niece know. She's the youngest of the family, or was the youngest of the family at that time. I came out to her as atheist, talking to her through text and stuff, like after the fact and all that. And then I called, sometimes I'll call her father, just, family talk. One time I called him, he said, I am going to have to ask you to stop talking about your atheism with my daughter. And that's what resonates with me, what you just said. It's like, tell me to sit down and shut up. He also said, when she gets older, because she's like 15 right now, or 15 or 16, when she's 18 or an adult, sure, fine.
I'm sorry that the statistic has proven true in your case. It's something that churches call the 4 to 14 window. You know, they think that if they can, and they're right, if they can isolate a child up into their young teens and cordon them off from any other ideas, especially when it comes to religion and politics, then, they've got them, supposedly got them for life. Now, that backfires occasionally, and I'm an example of that. I am sorry the statistic is born true in your case, but I appreciate you sharing it. It's an example, I think, of what we're up against out there. And I think it speaks to a tremendous insecurity if somebody doesn't even want to hear an opposing opinion, idea, philosophy, theology, or lack of. I think that speaks to how confident or not confident they are in their faith.
Do you think I should ask that question that you proposed?
Whether or not they would abide your request to not talk about their faith?
Right.
Why not? I mean, if you're having a conversation among adults, they've got a myopic view of the world. They see everything as a Christian worldview question. And I've used this tactic in my own discussions because my own family said to my parents, "You're embarrassing us. Can you just not talk about this? Why do you have to be so vocal?" And I returned fire, and I said, how would you respond if somebody told you not to be honest and speak about your belief, your philosophy, your value system? Well, no one will ever keep me from talking about my Jesus. I mean, it was in an indignant response. And I said, do you see that the double standard in the example of Christian privilege that's taking place? You are allowing for yourself a right that you wish to deny to me. Do you see that? I think that's a totally valid and even productive conversation. I think it's a great tactic. If the opportunity shows up, hell yeah, I would certainly do that.
Oh, well, I'm going to do that then. And hopefully I won't chicken out.
Well, you know, I mean, just whatever your comfort zone is. But you're a grown person. Yeah, if they want to throw out an edict, say fine. How would you feel if I reverse the streams and ask you to do that? Know that that is how I perceive the same thing. And I'm going to be true to myself. And I would hope that you would foster an environment where your children could also be true to themselves and not just live an inherited belief, not just have something downloaded into their skulls, but they get a chance to test it. And if it's worthy, then they'll pass the test. You know, your faith will pass the test. So there's no reason to be afraid of an opposing idea. I think that's a great discussion to have. No raised voices. You know, no pointing fingers, no accusations, just a good faith, good natured discussion about approach. Okay?
Okay. I appreciate that.
Thank you, Chelsea. I appreciate you. Have a great day.
All right. You have a great day, too. And right. You're doing great. Keep it up.
Very kind. Thank you very much. Ethan, thanks so much for calling. What are you thinking today? What's on your mind?
Well, first, I wanted to thank you for doing what you do. You're radio voice, your activism is, it's one of the more inspiring things that I get to enjoy during the week. And I can't be more appreciative of that. The reason I called besides saying thank you is the response that we atheists are getting on social media. I'm on TikTok, and at one point I had a main channel that had up to 107,000 followers, and Christians mass reported my channel until it got completely taken down.
Wow.
And now on a secondary channel, every time I go live, Christians will come in and they will argue with me their theology and I will disagree, and they will mass report that live until it gets shut down. I feel like they're getting worse. And even in comment sections of videos, it's dystopian. It really is. Their attitude, their behavior. You used to be able to shut an argument down by arguing slavery, but now they openly accept that, well, if that's what God says it's moral, then that's what's moral.
I had an interesting experience. This was a few months ago, but I had gone, and this speaks to one of the challenges of how people can game the social media system. And also the lack of nuance and context when it comes to flagging and banning on Facebook, etc. But I posted something about how I thought it was ironic that Christians reject evolution because Christians are animals, right? I mean, we are all higher primates. We are animals. And I found it ironic that an animal protests that they come from an animal and exist as an animal. And Facebook does not see the difference between an insult, you're just a filthy animal kind of a thing. And it was reported by some malcontent out there. And I got, I think, a 7-day ban, three or seven. I don't know. I got banned a few times for just something similar. And I tried to protest, but there was no way to say, no. What I mean is that we biologically qualify as animals. I was speaking to irony. No. There's a week-long ban from Facebook for hate speech. Somebody flagged that because they could, because, you know, it was a way of trying to shut down another point of view. And I think that's just a monumental insecurity. And to see them weaponize what should be a legitimate system for flagging hate speech, you know, I mean, I'm sorry, if your idea is that thin-skinned, the problem isn't me, the problem is your idea.
Yeah, I mean, I completely agree that it's largely probably their own insecurity, or I don't even know that it's insecurity. Like, when I try to put myself in their shoes, I imagine spite. I imagine anger and resentment. I don't necessarily imagine, like, they're just insecure in their position. I imagine that because somebody disagrees with them and is willing to call out various problems with their beliefs or with their theology, that they just automatically snap over to angry and resentful and spiteful. And then they just go and they report media because it's, you know, revenge.
I buy that. I think there's a lot of that. And, you know, it comes with cloaked in a superiority complex. I mean, I'm not blanketing all believers in this category, but boy, there is a faction,
no.
a strong faction of believers. And talk about piety and superiority. Spite is a great word.
I know that there's a huge problem with social media representation in a lot of ways, that things can get really negative, things can get really dark, things can go really bad. But on occasion, I will come across somebody who is an honest interlocutor. They want to have the conversation. They want to learn information. So I'm a member of the Satanic Temple. And when I mention that, some people, they become very curious. They want to know more about it. And I'm more than happy to explain what the Satanic Temple is and what it represents and where they can get more information on it. And that those conversations I do thoroughly enjoy. It's I jump into a live on TikTok and I've got immediately just 30 comments saying Jesus loves you, Jesus is king. And the dystopian part of it is depressing. It really is. When I see, there was a commenter on a video yesterday I saw. The video had something to do with the separation of church and state. And this commenter was adamant about the fact that there is no separation of church and state, that this is a Christian nation, that the laws should be written by, you know, Christian whatever. He was very just, and I just, every time I see that, I want to give up on humanity.
I don't think social media helps, because I feel the same way, you know, when I see Tim Barton and other people talking about how the Constitution was fashioned after the Bible. And I hear other people saying, well, you know, it's on the money and it's in the pledge, without knowing where those things came from. They're totally historically illiterate. And then, you know, a lot of that stuff, I don't know if it's the algorithms, but I see it over and over on Facebook and Twitter. And I'm like you, part of my heart is dead. I genuinely feel like part of my heart has been killed.
One of the other things that I absolutely love about the social media stuff is that I have learned an insane amount in regards to theology, stuff I would have never learned without social media, because I wouldn't have even begun to know where to look to find it. There are a couple of channels on TikTok that are absolutely amazing in regards to that. One of the guys I follow is a bachelor's degree theology. Another guy I follow, he doesn't have a degree, but he's just obsessed with religion. So he's studied and read about all the books of it in the history that's not mentioned in the Bible, but that's a part of the time period that the Bible was written. And you kind of piece together various things, like original Christianity was polytheistic. There was no hell doctrine up until recently, that kind of stuff. And the number of Christians who don't actually understand their own theology, it's kind of inspiring to some degree, because you can educate them on it. But then there's a few that are like, well, I don't believe what the archaeologists say. They're just brought here by the devil to convince us this lie or whatever. And you know, some of them get kind of extreme with it to that degree.
When you tell people that you're with the Satanic Temple, do they automatically knee jerk and think it's a theistic thing and you worship the devil kind of thing?
Yeah, there's a lot of that. I spend more time telling people that we don't believe in a literal Satan, that we don't worship a literal Satan. It's all more or less symbolistic. They'll ask me to kind of define what I mean by how do we use Satan as a symbol. And so I've learned a little bit enough of the history to know that the character Satan in the Bible isn't actually a specific character. It's an old word that refers to adversary. And in the context of the Bible, it's adversary of God. And in that spirit, I guess, we use that as a symbol to stand against the dogmatic or a very authoritarian character that is God in the Bible.
Lucian Greaves said something along the lines of Satan representing the rejection of tyranny.
Yeah, and I mean, there's another channel on TikTok, and I can't remember for the life of me, Hyperhumanity maybe is what it is, but he actually takes it a step further, and he reinterprets the Bible in a way where, like, the Christian God is actually Satan or the devil, and the devil is the good guy fighting against the tyranny of that character. And then I guess there's this, like, Book of Adam that was discovered later, or more recently, I'm not sure, but it kind of depicts it the same way. Like, the devil's the good guy, God is the bad guy. they reversed roles because, I mean, in the Bible, God really does as a character, and that's how I became an atheist as I read the Bible. He really does just indiscriminately murder people. And it doesn't matter, age group be damned. He'll murder whoever he wants. And the devil doesn't.
That's a nativity scene I would look for in, you know, what if we had the little baby Satan? And he's, you know, I'm not sure who else would be in the manger scene. But I mean, you know, if he's the hero of the story, the rebeller against tyranny, I think that would be, that would make for, you could actually sort of mix Halloween and Christmas in that context. And I support that. I think that would be a worthy
one. I do too. I think we should replace Christmas with Halloween. We need a second Halloween.
Well, you know, Ethan, I appreciate you, and I know it's frustrating. I don't have a solution, honestly, other than in my own life, I've had to limit my time online. I certainly engage with the community. I make sure that I'm scheduling posts that are relevant to our discussions on the Thinking Atheist pages because, you know, I want to make sure that you've got plenty of good stuff, material, that you're aware of what's happening. But I've had to, in some ways, just check out. Hey, you know, I'm not for these specific hours. I can't look anymore. I'm going to go over here and I'm going to try to protect my mind and heart because you get the impression that it's so unfixable. It's so out of control that we'll never get back. And that may be the case, but you know, it's really hard on your mental health, I think.
And I would agree with that. There are days when I have to just put my phone down, not even just, I'll wake up in the morning, I'll scroll, I'll see three comments, all of them equally as just asinine as it can possibly get. And I'll just put my phone down for a few hours and kind of just get my body going and my day going, and then maybe try again later in the afternoon. But again, I still love the social media because there's always new things to learn. And I don't know if you're on TikTok at all, if you've scrolled through it at all, but if there's a couple of channels I could recommend that I think you would absolutely you'd want to engage with because they're really good. They're well-versed. Since I started TikTok back in, like, I think the fall of 2017, I have seen a massive rise in atheist content. If you go on TikTok and you search the hashtag deconverted, you will come across Mormons, Jehovah's Witnesses, Catholics. There is so much atheist TikTok. It's crazy. And Satanist TikTok is now starting to, I've noticed, kind of come up on the rise. There's more Satanists out there doing it. It's become a powerhouse for the debate between theology and atheism. And there's been YouTube channels that have started on it. Nerds of Heresy, Tart, just a number of really good podcasts and YouTube channels, I think, all stemmed from where we all started on TikTok.
All right. I'll check it out. I've resisted so far, but I'll dive in. I'll take a look at what you're talking about, and I appreciate the heads up, Ethan. Take care of yourself, my friend. Thanks for calling.
And again, I want to say thank you so much for doing what you do. You're an amazing guy. You really are.
You're very kind, and that's huge for me, so I appreciate you. Take care.
Have a good one.
Yeah, I've resisted creating a TikTok account. It just seems like one more thing to juggle, you know. Can you fast forward a TikTok video? People send me TikTok clips, and sometimes there's a setup, and I, you know, my time is precious. I'm like, whatever the payoff is, I sometimes I need to get there. Is there like a scroll? Can you fast forward a TikTok video? Or are they by nature so short anyway that function is not allowed? But I feel it when it comes to social media. And I see it sometimes in the atheist community. I mean, you know, most of my beef is with the God believers, you know. But, you know, even when we engage the theists, how much of that is healthy? And I may not know the answer to that, but here's an awful theocrat. I will call them out, and then they respond and call me out. And then I screenshot their call out, and I respond with my second call out. And then they block me, and then I take a screenshot of the fact that they blocked me, and I show that you have been blocked, and then I go and ha-ha about the fact that now they've blocked me. Ha-ha, everybody comes to my... And then they go and then they get blocked and they post screenshots. And Jesus Christ, I mean, is it therapeutic? Is it healthy? It might be. It just wears me out. Wears me out. And sometimes I engage in that way. I'm guilty. Sometimes we need to draw attention to the worst of the worst, what they're doing, why they're doing it. I think mockery and humor can be beneficial. Sometimes we need to roast the sacred cows. You know, we take these people on their lofty perches and we bring them down some notches. So I know that there's utility in it, but I mean, over and over and over, the fighting and the conflict and the tumult that is nonstop in front of my Twitter feed. Is it my own fault because the algorithms push everything there because that's what I've been interested in? Do I need to subscribe to different pages so that maybe I'll get more cute animal feeds and good news stories? How does that work? I have questions. Ellis, thanks for waiting, my friend. Are you there?
Hey, this is Matthew Owen.
Oh, I've got Ellis on my screen. That's my fault. Matthew,
yeah,
thanks for calling.
Yeah, Ellis. Well, Ellis is my, his last name. Anyway, how are you, man?
I'm well. What's on your mind?
Oh, no, dude, I just wanted to tell you thank you. You've been a huge part of my process as well. I was raised in the South, and very much of what I was steeped in as a child was Southern Baptist fundamentalist doctrine, and I was Christian homeschooled. I remember, you know, the arguments against evolution starting at a very early age. My parents were very cool, but the whole system, right? Like the whole system, we were part of the homeschool group, the church. A lot of it was just crazy, man.
You obviously got to a point where you were not satisfied, though. You were shifting a little bit. And then
I'm in recovery. I'm a recovering addict. And so through my recovery, I've always had questions, and I was the black sheep in Sunday school at times, because I would always ask these pertinent questions. Me and very few of my friends were on board with it. You know, a lot of it was just, hey, shut up, let's just get through this. You know what I mean? And it's like, no, like, I want to know, right? Like, and so then I was really sold on the God thing. Really sold, Seth. I mean, like, as devout as I imagine anyone could be, I was in line to become a preacher, and it just started, the more I studied, the more it did not add up. Hmm. And the more, growing up, you know, I got into drug addiction, and I needed medical help. It's a disease, you know. You know, I needed psychological and medical help, and my parents did everything that they could for me, and they did the best that they could. I have wonderful parents, and I still have a wonderful relationship with them, although they profess faith and I don't. But that's not usually a big point of contention. I was calling because, in response to your point, I suffer very similarly in the medical field. You might not imagine this, but like in nursing, people kind of expect you to have this faith that God's going to step in, at least where I'm in the Bible Belt. I'm in North Carolina, okay? So like where we are is very, very ingrained that, you know, you have faith that God's going to heal these people. And I'm like, no, like, I mean, I don't say that to my patients, of course. Like, you know, whatever their faith is, I respect and admire that, and that's great for them. But like, it's very disconcerting at times that people that know me personally, it's almost as if this air of, if only you had faith, you know,
yeah,
maybe that one wouldn't have died. And I'm just like, you got to be shitting me, right? Like, you've got to be kidding me. Like, I'm applying actual science here, right? Like with the COVID thing. You know, like, I mean, we deal with this, and I already dealt with the ilk of the fucking anti-vaxxers and all of their ilk. And then we dealt with all that, right? The Trumpers and the MAGAs and the, you know, COVID deniers. I dealt with all that and mostly with grace. I mean, weapons grade facepalm, right? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But, you know, mostly keeping it together. And it's just like at the end of all that, it's still like this expectation, this unrealistic expectation that, you know, we should have all this faith. And I'm like, where's God when I'm given chest compressions? You know, like I was talking to my mom the other day. I was like, I've got a patient on X amount of, you know, drug and XYZ in the unit. And I'm like, I'm pumping them full of rocket fuel. Where's God now? You know?
Hmm. Like, yeah. Well, I think it's hard when it doesn't make any logical sense. You understand how they use religion as a coping mechanism, but it doesn't mean that it doesn't.
I do. And I'm respectful of that.
It doesn't mean that it makes any sense. You know, thank you, Lord, that the chemo is working. Makes no logical sense.
No sense. Well, you made a point one time, Seth, and I've used this analogy a lot, and it's a beautiful analogy. I appreciate it. I don't know if it was specific to you or if it originated with you, but God likes silly putty, right? The young man gets shot. The 3K scenario, right? The goalpost keeps shifting further and further, right? Like, if he survives, oh, thank God, right? And if he's horribly wounded but still survives, oh, God spared him, thank God. Or if he dies, oh, God called him home, right? Thank God. I'm just like, at what point do we stop and take a step back and say, wait a second, you know?
I got a whole chapter about this in the manuscript that I am working on. So it's funny that you should bring this up because it's so freaking relevant. And I know it's got to be frustrating. Just know that I appreciate you, somebody in the healthcare industry who is so pro-science, who puts up with so much BS. I think, you inspire me. So, man, I appreciate you very much.
I don't know about that, but I appreciate it. But keep putting out content, dude, because, I mean, there are days that it helps get me through, man. Like, I do what's right by my patients, and I don't care what faith they profess, if they say pray for me, absolutely, sure, whatever, right? Like, I get it. I get the comfort and coping thing, but like the dirty looks, oh, he's an atheist, like I get so tired of that sometimes,
Oh, yeah. Well, where wears you out? I mean, we're human beings, I think, and being othered for no good reason. I mean, that's no picnic. And after a while, I think there becomes a callousness, I think bitterness, resentment. And I think that's natural and, understandable. Just know that you're not alone.
Absolutely.
There are others of us out here. Our numbers are growing, okay?
We are, friend. A lot of it's that compartmentalization,
Yeah.
That's what happens. But anyway, it is what it is, man. The onwards and upwards.
Onwards.
I appreciate it, Seth. You're the man. Upwards.
Thanks, Matt. Take care of yourself, man.
Yeah, man. Thanks.
See you later. There was a meme going around that talked about the progression of believers in COVID, and it goes something along the lines of, my God is greater than COVID, and I won't live in fear, and then please pray for me, I have COVID, and then the last one is, please support my GoFundMe. And I've seen variations of that. When somebody is unable to pay their own medical bills, and they believe God provides. Whenever they're going through these hugely expensive medical treatments, and when things go wrong, they blame the doctor. When things go right, they thank God. I just think, man, it must be brutal to be a member, a rational member of the medical community. You know what I'm saying? That's got to suck. I see some more calls queued up here. Let's take a short break. I'll be right back as we hear more from our listeners during this sort of weird holiday season. Hang on. My patrons get the broadcast early. They get it totally commercial free. And thank you so much for your support. Patreon.com/SethAndrews, kind of a free-for-all, kind of a venting show today, talking to our listeners as I go back to the switchboard. Is it Char? Do I have that right?
Yes, you do.
Thanks for calling. What's on your mind today?
Well, first off, Seth, I want to say what you've said on the last call and what you've said to other people many times on the show, although it won't sound as smooth as your voice always does. You're not alone. You've got a community here, man.
Thank you very much. It means a lot to me. So what are you thinking today? What's on your mind?
Oh, just everything you talked about at the beginning. I was feeling those feels, man.
What are you
feeling? I mean, othered on the holidays.
Do you have a religious circle whenever you go to? Do you even do Thanksgiving and Christmas? What's that like?
Well, not so much. And for me, it's always been a little more complex. Even before there was a religious bent to it, there were other dynamics at play. I grew up, and the easiest way I describe it to people, I grew up in Hoarders meets Jerry Springer. That was my upbringing.
Wow.
And I was kind of, and I was kind of the black sheep of the family to the point where, you know, I was a stepchild, and like, so on Easter and Christmas and stuff, they thought it was funny to like hide my gifts or hide my basket and let all the other kids do their stuff first. So I felt othered then. And then eventually I got placed in foster care. I got taken out of that situation, which was great. But then I'm moving around to all these different foster homes, and it's, you know, everyone has their own sense of normal, and everyone has their own traditions and their own things going on, and I've never really felt a part of it. So the holidays have always been really weird for me, and now the last few years being an atheist, it's become even weirder.
Yeah. Do you get cynical about the commercialization? You know, people judge the success of the holiday by how the retailers do and all that stuff.
Oh, definitely. Definitely, definitely, definitely. It's all way too much sometimes. And like, even with people saying, you know, all the supply chain issues that are going on, people won't be able to get things for Christmas. And I'm sitting here going, you know, whatever happened to making something? Or I'm sure you have friends that are artists or authors that make things. Order from them. Help out your people that are right around you instead of, you know, trying to get the next best thing that you probably don't need anyway.
What happened to the gift of time and connection with those you love? And, you know, why in the world did it all become about pieces of plastic or whatever that end up collecting dust in the closet? I don't know. I've become one of those people where I buy a few gifts, but I promise not to buy out of obligation if I can help it. You know, just buy because you want to. And if you don't want to, then skip it and try to give the gift of time and attention and love. And I think those are the things that really matter. Sounds like a damn Hallmark movie, but you know what I'm talking about, right?
Oh, for sure. Before COVID hit, I kind of had a different strategy to Christmas shopping altogether. I had like a bin up in my closet. And as I was out and about, if I saw something and I said, oh, that's so-and-so, that reminds me of so-and-so, or so-and-so could really use that, I'd grab it, put it up in the box, and then when it came their birthday or Christmas, I'd pull everything down, and I'm mostly already done.
Oh,
it wasn't just shopping for the point of shopping. It was
smart.
You know,
I mean,
trying
smart
to connect with them.
You're on point. Your radar's up all 12 months. If you see something great, you just, it's a fortuitous moment. You stock it away for December. That's really good. That's really good.
And well, I have a basic rule for that sort of thing that for any type of Christmas gift that I'm getting, something you want, something you need, something to wear, and something to read.
Oh, I got to write that down.
It shouldn't
be more than that. No, no, say it again. Say it again.
Something you want, something you need, something to wear, and something to read.
Love it. Love it. All right.
Yeah, I don't think you need any more than that.
You speak wisdom, great oracle. Shar, thank you so much for calling today, and I hope the holidays are good to you, okay?
Absolutely. And Seth, keep going. Even, you know, if you need to take a break, if you're feeling burnout, you know, take a break. But you mean a lot to this community. You know, there aren't many shows where you can just call in, express feelings, and talk on these topics. I know there are a few shows you can call in and talk about debates and things and actually debate the subjects, but you're important to this community, so take a break if you need one, but keep pushing on, sir.
It shall be done. Thank you, Shar, so much. Take care.
All right, man. You too.
Bye-bye. Wow. I feel the love. I don't see a name. 708. Hi, who's this?
Hey, Seth, it's Lou.
Lou, I appreciate you calling. What's on your mind? What do you want to talk about?
Well, the holidays are a hell of a thing. And I don't really want to make it about me because fortunately for me, I have a huge family and a lot of them are very religious. We all used to get together when we were all younger. And a lot of the people that we used to collect with were religious. Fortunately for me, they've seen that I'm not religious, but I loved going to the parties. every single Christmas. On Thanksgiving, of course.
Yeah.
I'm jumping on the bandwagon.
You know, I it's fun to gather. I enjoy most Christmas music. I even the stuff like that has a religious theme to it. Some of the songs are fun, and you know, if you want to put a baby Jesus in the manger, it's no skin off my teeth. And you know, I'm not that guy. There is an outsideness, for lack of a better word, that many of us do feel. I'm sure you felt it as well. Everybody else is. They think the little plastic baby Jesus represents a real guy, and that's hard sometimes.
Yeah, I don't want to take that from my family, absolutely, you know, and they celebrate it and they have it around in the living room and everybody gathers around it and we all eat and, you know, everybody's happy and stuff, and I'm thinking to myself, okay, this is good. And I don't question it, but deep down inside it's like, what is really keeping us together? What is the bond and stuff? And can we do without this? And I'm kind of the black sheep.
Have you noticed that it seems the stuff that religious people enjoy the most about Christmas have nothing to do with Christ? They get together with people they care about, and there's delicious food, and there's music, and decor, and gifts, and all these things. I mean, you could pull a literal belief in the baby Jesus pretty much out of the picture, and they'd still have almost everything that they really enjoyed in the first place. I always found that an interesting perspective.
Absolutely. And then once all that stuff falls apart, it's like, what is it that you have to hold everything together once you lose one element out of it? Okay, family is one thing. Belief is another. But you take the family out of it, and we have to adhere to the religion. That stuff doesn't keep us together. And is it really religion or family-based? Or what is it that they're really holding on to? And then when you let it all go, or when it falls apart, excuse me, because my family is about to get to that point where it's like, okay, what are we going to do now? Is what we had before going to hold us together? We have to bury someone more often than not, and then I have to be at the casket, and then they talk about religion, and it's like, I got to bite my tongue, but that keeps us united.
Yeah, well, so that there is a difference between peace and an absence of conflict. And I do find it interesting that we as atheists are the ones who are expected to sit on our hands and bite our lips as everybody else is going, Jesus, 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 Jesus. You know, it's very much a double standard. But it is, you know, I think the holidays, it's just like the church. I think one of the things that makes the Christian church so attractive, hell, church in general, is community, tradition, ritual, music, all those things that you really don't need a myth to enjoy. And I think you've helped to highlight that in terms of Christmas. So I do appreciate your calling, my friend. Thank you so very much.
Not a problem.
All right. Have a good one. My family is huge. I'm one of six siblings. Everybody except me has been procreating like rabbits. There's children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren. And it became impractical to buy gifts for everybody. We used to draw names. All right, we're going to draw a name. Oh, look, Seth has to buy for so-and-so. And I'm like, well, I don't even know these people. You know, it's like a four-year-old. I don't have children. What am I supposed to get this kid? And then after a while, it became gift cards. So there's no imagination behind the gift. Oh, a Walmart gift card. Thank you. Oh, a Starbucks gift card. Oh, an Amazon gift card. Thank you. And that became bland and vanilla and generic. But then my family started doing Dirty Santa. Now, they won't call it Dirty Santa because they're a hugely conservative, fundamentalist, evangelical family, and we don't do anything dirty in our family. So they call it Classy Santa. Dirty Santa, if you're not familiar, is you bring a gift, usually one that's kind of fun. There's a dollar cap on it, so you know you don't spend more than $25 or whatever. It's an arbitrary limit somebody sets. You wrap it, you bring it, everybody sets a gift in the pile, kind of in the middle of the room. And then when you play Dirty Santa, you all draw numbers and you're in sequence and you go and grab a box. You don't know what's in it. Oh, here's a gift. And you open it up. And whatever that gift is yours. You know, it could be a tool set. It could be a doll. It could be a blanket. It could be a, I don't know, whatever. Then person number two does the same thing. Or they can choose to steal your gift. And then you go back to the pile and you pull another box. And once a gift has been passed around three times, it is what they call frozen, meaning whoever has the gift the third time, when it lands in the third lap, so to speak, that's it. That gift is frozen. That is your gift. And that's a fun way to do Christmas because there's an element of surprise. There's levity. Nobody's really buying out of obligation or out of their comfort zone. You know, Dirty Santa is kind of a, it's often done at office parties, but it's really a fun solution for somebody who has a large family or a large gathering and you want to add some sport to it as everybody's gathered around. They're laughing, and especially when a gift is stolen by somebody else, you know, whoa, everybody's kind of hooping and hollering, and then you go back to the pile and wrap the wrapping off the next one. I always thought that was, that's a lot of fun. It's been a nice compromise in my own circle. It is the one thing about Christmas at my family's that I really do enjoy. Everything else is, I don't know, it's more like clocking in. You know, I'm sorry. I don't mean to, I'm not trying. I mean, I'm just being honest. I feel like it's clocking in. Let's see. I've got Randy. Hi, Randy. Thanks for waiting. Are you with me?
I'm with you, Seth.
Well, we're into the holidays. What are your thoughts?
Well, this might help some of your viewers. I think I've kind of carried this in my heart for many years since I first encountered it. We're of similar age, similar probably experiences growing up, you know, children of the 60s. Have you heard of Jonathan Livingston Seagull by Richard Bach? It's a fairly famous book.
I have not.
Okay. Well, he's got one that's a little more obscure called Illusions. And this is a little excerpt from Illusions. It'll take me 10 seconds to read it. The bond that links your true family is not one of blood, but of respect and joy in each other's life. Rarely do members of one family grow up under the same roof. So there you have it. Instead of, you know, bemoaning the sense of disconnection you might have with your brothers, your sisters, your parents, you know, look around to those friends you've made along the way. You know, that's your true family. You know, consider reframing your holiday get-togethers to include these special people that you've carefully curated into your life, not the crapshoot of what you were just born into.
That's really good stuff. Who said that? Who did the quote come from?
So that's a book called Illusions by Richard Bach. You could find it in your library. I don't know if it's still in print. Take you an afternoon to read it. It's like 140 pages long.
That's good stuff.
And Jonathan Livingston Seagull would be his more famous book. That's also about 150 pages long. They're both great.
The Family We Choose.
Yep. It's just that carefully curated set of friends. You share common interests and philosophical leanings that, you know, again, with your family, you'd think that they've maybe had some influence on how you think. But as you know, you're independent. You can break away from those indoctrinations and carve your own path and just seek out that family of friends that see the world similarly.
That's my kind of call, man.
So anyway, once again, the bond that links your true family is not one of blood, but of respect and joy in each other's life. Rarely do members of one family grow up under the same roof.
Good stuff, Randy. Thank you so much for offering it on the show, okay?
Yep. Hope it helps you have a good holiday.
All right. Take care. Thank you.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye. I think we've said something along those lines on the show before. It's because you have somebody who's on your bio family tree. Does it mean that they're good people? Does it mean that you have anything in common, that you have shared values? Does it guarantee? I mean, I get tribal bonds, you know, blood bonds. I mean, I understand, but if you are related to people that you don't relate to, I mean, This sounds, again, like a Hallmark movie. But while I do love my biological family, you are the family I choose. Does that make sense? There is an acceptance, there is a respect, there is a love, even in disagreement, that we can enjoy, that marks familial bonds. It's good to see you. When you walk into the room, it's better. I'm so glad to be in your company. I know that even if we disagree, that you won't cast me off. Your love is not conditional, kind of thing. To feel a sense of bonds that require no biological family tree. I mean, I think that's probably one of the biggest things this community that the Thinking Atheist is has meant for me, and I'm hoping it has meant for you as well, is a place to belong. Now, you don't have to be, you don't have to feel the outsideness. You know what I'm saying? You don't have to stand in the periphery and be told that you're broken or that you need to shut up about who you are or what you think. You're not to blame for whatever is wrong with the world. That you can come to a place where people get you and can relate to you and totally jive with where you've been. Or if they haven't walked your steps, maybe they're curious to learn what your steps look like and what you came out of. And, you know, it's a support group kind of thing. I don't know. It's hard to wrap language around, but I am tremendously thankful that, you know, family can come in so many forms. And in that way, I do consider this community a family. You've certainly been that for me. I can't think of a better way to finish than with Randy's call. You are amazing. I know there are challenges ahead, especially for many in terms of family, the holidays, etc. But just know that, again, we have each other and that, you know, we have so much goodness that we can cultivate and create on our terms, living life on our terms. For your encouragement, I want to say thank you. I didn't mean to treat you like my bartender at the beginning of the show. But, you know, it's good medicine. You are good medicine for me. It's good therapy. And so thanks for excusing my selfishness in that way as I lean on you over the holidays. Let's do it again. And we'll meet back here on the show. Have a wonderful week, okay?
Follow The Thinking Atheist on Facebook and Twitter. For a complete archive of podcasts and videos, products like mugs and t-shirts featuring the Thinking Atheist logo, links to atheist pages and resources, and details on upcoming free thought events and conventions, log on to our website, thethinkingatheist.com.